This is John Williams, your friendly and popular host. Pete, next time I decide to talk about patriotism, shut me up. 708 said, hey, John, what's the harm in playing the national anthem before a game? A lot of schools do not say the Pledge of Allegiance in the morning to start the day. I remember when TV stations would come on the air and start the day's programming with our national anthem. I served in Vietnam, and in my mind, I can never hear it enough. 312 said, jingoism in American sports is gross. 8477, I want to thank WGN Radio for broadcasting the national anthem before the Blackhawks games. That guy that sings the national anthem is awesome. I'm telling you, he's the best. And other cities and teams have now copied the Blackhawks version of that super popular, super fun, super uplifting, super patriotic national anthem. But we are the original. 269 says, unless the people complaining about not playing the national anthem and standing and saluting are standing and saluting at home, then they should just stifle themselves. John, sometimes in high school in the 1970s, we would be in the locker room when the anthem happened to be played, and we didn't know the timing. Funny note, I still rock back and forth during it like I did as a player, even though I'm 62 now. Love your show. John, since many people think sports teams need to sing the national anthem before their games, I think all workplaces throughout the country should sing the national anthem before they open their doors for the day. So anyone who opposes this idea is therefore trying to erase patriotism. Sarcastic emoticon. And the list goes on like that. Pro and con, pro and con, pro and con. A lot of con on Eric Zorn, though. He's the guy that took us down this road. Hi, Eric Zorn.
I took you down this road. Is that right?
Yes, you did.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it is interesting that people who complain about this don't stand up at home. In fact, a lot of people are in the kitchen or in the bathroom during the national anthem when it's on television. So it's performance patriotism is really what it is. And we do it at ball games, but we don't do it at plays or movies. It's an odd tradition. I've gotten used to it over the years, but I can't really defend it as something you need to do. One thing that interests me about the Pledge of Allegiance, you know, you're supposed to say it every morning in public schools in Illinois. My kids told me that they never did it in their high schools.
Wait a minute.
Happen.
That's current law in Illinois. We're supposed to say the pledge before school each day.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll bet my son's never, I don't know what happens at the school my son teaches at. He's never mentioned that. I'll have to ask him. But
yeah, it's one of the things that's like, it has a whiff of authoritarianism. It has a whiff of countries that don't, that require you to make these public displays. I don't really care for the Pledge of Allegiance requirement because just like I don't like prayers before public meetings, I think there's something that is conformist. And it puts pressure on people, making people say that we're one nation under God, which was a phrase that was inserted during the Eisenhower administration into the Pledge of Allegiance. I don't like that kind of performative stuff. I feel like we should have our displays of patriotism be restricted to patriotic events and not necessarily just ball games,
like a 4th of July ceremony or something else.
Oh yeah, of course.
Just one more use of the word performative here. 8608 said, it's no different than people who say you have to wave around a Bible to show faith. It's just become a performative way to attack people who express beliefs different than you. Plus, why does someone even have to be patriotic in order to play sports? Well, I don't know if Kim Mulkey is patriotic or not. I don't know her politics. I have a guess, though, and I'll bet she's got a flag pinned somewhere. I think that's part of the problem for some people. They feel that the conservative movement in this country has co-opted the flag and patriotism, and some people, I think, bristle a little bit at, unfortunately, singing the song because they don't want to pick sides or feel like they are doing that. Maybe that's a stretch, Eric, but I think there's a little something to that.
Oh, no, I think you're absolutely right. And I think that's been going on for years and years, where the right tries to co-opt the flag and patriotism, and the idea of loving the country. There's something sort of ironic about it in a way, because I feel like that liberals and Democrats, in my feeling, support the founding ideals of this country better than those on the right right now. But
Don't say that. Let's not go there now.
But I love what this country stands for. I don't love everything that it does, and I think that's a fine expression. I'm assuming this is related somehow to the flag burning.
I can sure get you there. I did a moment ago, but it is interesting, right? Like, there's no way to win in a conversation about who's more patriotic. It's just such a personal, ephemeral sort of thing. But I do understand a conservative or the right's view that we all enjoy and are fortunate to live in America, even at this time. And let's take stock of that. Let's appreciate how we got here and the people who sacrificed together. But what does America represent? But every kind of freedom that you could hope for. And one of those freedoms is to feel and act the way you want to feel and act. So another display of Americanism is not standing and saluting the flag if you don't want to, or wave a Bible, or whatever it else is everybody else is doing.
Yeah,
you're free.
Yeah, exactly. Try burning a Russian flag in front of the Kremlin and see where it gets you. It's one of those things where burning the flag, I find it an objectionable statement. I think it's too broad. I think it insults the entire country. And what it is saying is that this country is not living up to its ideals. I'm translating what I think people are saying when they say that this country says it stands for X, Y, and Z, but is not. And so I am burning those. It's not that you're burning the flag because you are rejecting what America stands for. What you're saying is that America is not living up to what it ostensibly stands for.
Okay, but it's hard to interpret that. But you're right. But
yes.
You're right. That's a very broad way to express a fine point.
It's a broad way. It's an incendiary way. It's very hard to react to that in a calm way. And so I understand why people get upset about it. I think there are other ways of making that point. I have a broader problem with what Alderman Cintia Lopez is up to. Standing up for this group that is threatening to create mayhem during the Democratic National Convention this summer in Chicago. I think that's really wrong. Let's talk about that.
So Alderman Cintia Lopez is the guy that is a member of the city council, and he was at an event where a flag was burned, and he said that he did not realize the flag was being burned. And while the city council seems to have resolved that, he gets to keep his chairmanship of the housing committee, and he's still an alderman, and even the guy that started this whole thing apologized and didn't even vote for his ouster. So they've patched that up. But remaining is the fact that Cintia Lopez was at an event. He had to know what the purpose of that event was, or rather, who was putting that on, right, Eric? He had to know who was sponsoring it.
Well, he ought to have known, certainly. I mean, the group is behind enemy lines, and it's pro Hamas, and it is celebrating the idea of people coming to Chicago and fighting with police on the streets this summer. It wants to create major disruptions in Chicago. I don't think an alderman should be there. I think aldermen should be saying, let's debate this like Americans. Let's try to resolve this dispute we have over kind of support we have for Israel and what we think should be going on in Gaza like Americans and not like street thugs. And I think an alderman's place, I mean, you know, he's got his right to say what he wants to say, certainly, but I firmly reject what this organization is trying to do. First of all, because I don't think people should be fighting with police on the streets. But second of all, if you actually want a better resolution in Israel and Gaza between the Palestinians and the Israelis, you can't, I don't think, want to support Donald Trump. I mean, this would be my view of this, which is that if you think that by disrupting the Democratic National Convention and harming the candidacy of Joe Biden, which is what would happen, it's what happened in 1968, where we hampered the candidacy of Hubert Humphrey by the riots in the streets of Chicago. If you think that is an infantile way of approaching political protest, and it threatens to backfire. I mean, you can end up with Donald Trump as president again. And if you think Donald Trump is a friend of the Palestinians, you need to do more reading. He's the one who's telling Israelis to finish the job. And So I don't understand where this alderman is coming from exactly. I know that like a lot of us, he wants to see an end to the atrocities in Gaza. The food workers that were killed just the other day is an example of that. Too many women and children, innocent civilians, have been killed in Gaza. Way too many. I think we all feel that. We all want a resolution to that. But the idea that we're going to make it better by fighting with police on the streets of Chicago during the Democratic National Convention,
right,
harming the candidacy of Joe Biden, I think is really, really naive, is just the kindest word for it.
Well, so some of the literature that organization is handing out says, make your back-to-school fashion. Remember, this will happen, the Democratic National
Mid-August.
Committee will happen in mid-August before the kids go back to school. So one of their pieces of literature says, make your back-to-school fashion a bruise from the Chicago Police Department. It's saying, get ready to fight physically with the police or the people on the other side of whatever the heck it is they're trying to accomplish here. I'm reminded a little bit of the bizarre, nightmarish group that arrived after Black Lives Matter protests began in the country. We had that group with the raincoats and the umbrellas over at the Columbus statue, where they were fighting with police and creating mayhem and then disappearing. And I don't know how organized this group is or what we can expect when the DNC comes here, but Lordy, we don't need that. And for a city councilman to be at an event that group is organizing is stupid. That's just counterproductive.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think that the city council and the mayor should be speaking with one voice on this, which is, yes, protest, have you let your voice be heard, but don't create riots in the streets of Chicago. It's not fair to Chicago. It's not fair to the police. It's not fair to Democrats, and it doesn't help your cause. It's not going to advance the cause that you think it's going to advance. There are very, very few instances in this country over violent protest. You're fighting with police and so on. Very few instances where that proves effective. There's a lot more instances where mass peaceful protest proves effective.
John, I'm shocked at Eric Zorn. Go live in another country, Eric. It's not an odd tradition. It's a tradition of saying the anthem. But 815 noticed that many students and professional athletes aren't even American citizens. And 815 said Eric is 100% right. It's performative patriotism. Seems a little propaganda-ish to me, especially recently. So there's the pro and con on the national anthem before our events. The LSU women's basketball team was not on the floor for the national anthem last night, if you're wondering why we're talking about it, aside from what happened with the city council and their brouhaha over patriotism. Mm-hmm. The coach of the LSU women Tigers said, we always go after we warm up. We're never out there for the national anthem. I'm not being un-American. I'm just doing what we normally do, she said. All right, Eric, a couple of other topics here. You ready?
Yeah, I'm ready to go.
Well, let's talk about your tweet of the week, or your tweet. What is this called, this tweet fest?
I call it tweet madness. It's a bracket tournament. You know, every week at the Picayune Sentinel, I offer 10 tweets and ask readers to vote on them. And then at the end of the year, or actually every March, I take the winners from the last 52 weeks and I add a few other favorites in. And I create a 64-tweet bracket and have people vote. You do the bracket tournaments on your show quite a bit,
yep.
And so now we're down to the e-tweet eight, as I call it. There are eight left after starting with a round of 64. And I got to say, there's one matchup that's literally tied right now with more than 1,000 votes. It's like the Cook County State's Attorney's race.
Which one is it?
I wanted you to vote. Here's one. Me, it's not about how many times you fall. It's about how many times you get back up. Cop, that's not how field sobriety tests work.
That one's taking
and
on.
That one's 50%. And the other one is, the main cause of immigration is that we're still a country where people want to go, but we're working on fixing that.
50-50 on that, huh?
50-50 on those two. You can go to the Picayune Sentinel and vote, and your vote is really going to matter because they are exactly tied right now. The other three matchups are a little bit more slanted. Do you want to hear some of those?
Well, I've got them in front of me, if I may. Which of these two tweets is funnier? And I won't read all of them, but I'll tell you the ones I think are really good. Doctor, your parents were in a car accident. Me, how are they? Doctor, they're extremely critical. Me, So they're awake. That's good. That one's got to be winning, right?
Yeah, that one is winning. You're right.
And then what about this one? Which of these tweets is funnier in another one of the brackets? Sometimes I have to remind myself to get off the internet, go outside, and judge people in person. Is that one winning?
It is not winning right now. No, it is. It's down. It's at 42% to 58% for the competing one, which is, when I was a kid, you could go to a store with just a dollar and come home with 4 comic books, 3 candy bars, 2 packs of trading cards, a bag of chips, and a cold drink. Now they have cameras everywhere.
All right. If I go to the Picayune Sentinel, that's where the brackets are for you?
That's where the brackets are. Yeah, I go to the Picayune Sentinel. There's links. And there's also, I've got a link to a visual tweets contest that I'm running too. I have on Tuesdays, I present the best of the jokes that rely on images or photos. And those don't work as well on the radio, unfortunately.
So the new, listen to me. I'm about to say the new Cook County State's Attorney, but she is the Democratic nominee. Eileen O'Neill Burke is going to run in November. She'll be on the ballot. It's just funny how we sort of treat this as, well, now we know who the state's attorney is. We may well, but technically she is just the Democratic nominee now. She'll take on Bob Fioretti probably on the Republican side. Well, in fact, he won the Republican nomination.
He was unopposed, yeah.
And she may still be. So we'll wait in November and officially crown whoever is going to be the Cook County state's attorney. But you've noticed, and I have too, that some of the things she's said now that she's the nominee are a little bit different than at least how she was portrayed during the campaign. Agreed?
Well, yeah, she sort of tried to be all things to all people. When she would speak to more reform-minded groups, she would talk about her support for the Safety Act, the so-called Safety Act, which is about getting rid of cash bail and so on. And she portrayed herself as a progressive prosecutor. And in speaking to other groups, she would talk about how she wants to, say, lower the threshold for felony charges for shoplifting. You know, that Kim Fox, the current state's attorney, had raised that threshold. You had to steal more than $1,000 in order to be charged with a felony for shoplifting. She wants to lower it to the state standard of $300, which made it seem like she was a little bit tougher on crime. And I think she will be. I think she is, of the two candidates, being Clayton Harris III and former Judge Eileen O'Neill Burke, that she is the one who is somewhat more conservative than Harris. And that's why the police union, for instance, backed her. That's why she got a lot of Republican money and so on. But she's not going to mark, I don't believe she's going to mark a significant change. I think she wants to work. She said that she wants to work on making sure that we don't release people. You know, there's the cash bail thing, and that she feels like there are too many people who are released on ankle monitors or just without any restrictions whatsoever before their trial. And that this is, she wants to crack down on that some. But this is not a return to some sort of hard law and order situation, I don't believe.
I wonder if that's, not that we had a return to hard law and order candidate on the Democratic ballot, and a Democrat seems to win all of these races. But, boy, you listen to my show, you talk to people in the streets, they want somebody, they want the police, they want the mayor, they want the state's attorney, they want everybody to be quote-unquote tougher on crime. So then why don't we get somebody that is that?
Well, when presented with that choice, it was surprising to me because Clayton Harris III had the backing of the Democratic Party, had the backing of the teachers union, a lot of the powerful Democratic political interests, and I think a lot of voters are saying, like, no, we want someone who's a little tougher than that. And it's the kind of crimes that we're seeing. These robbery sprees going through the north side and the near northwest side are very frightening to people. Even though crime is overall down, there's certain kinds of crimes that are up, and they're very frightening to people. And they want them taken seriously, and they want these people taken off the street. And I understand that.
Okay, you and I will talk more about this and other things when the Mincing Rascals meet. That'll be tomorrow. The podcast drops every early Wednesday evening or late afternoon, and I'll visit with you then. Meantime, folks can check your stuff out. Just email ericzorn@gmail.com. Thank you, Mr. Zorn.
Thanks, John. Talk to you then.